Yes, this is Mr. Yogi Mayer, Reel One. And if I could ask you, first of all, Mr. Mayer, to tell me something about your background, you know, where you were born and brought up, and the sort of lifestyle you had.
I come from a well-settled family, born in Bad Kreuznach, which is a small tributary to the River Rhine. My family, on father's side, comes from the town which had Jews already in the early Middle Ages, and the cemetery where they are buried was opened by the Jewish community in 1661. And I'm going back to Germany in autumn to be invited to give various talks about what it was like to be a Jew in the town of Kreuznach.
How do you spell the name? Would you mind?
A-R-E-U-Z, Kreuz, N-A-C-H, Kreuznach.
N-E-C-H, Kreuz.
Yeah. Kreuznach. N-A-C-H.
N-A-C-H, right, right. And that's one word, is it?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Your grandparents? Could I ask you about your grandparents?
Oh, what? My grandparents, yes. My grandmother, I remember well, because she lived with us, quite a formidable lady, and she died when she was 86. My grandfather must have died 20 years earlier, and I never met him. They lived in a little town called Monsingen, M-O-N-Z-I-N-G-E-N, which is further up the River Nahe, and the whole cousins and uncles came from the little villages nearby, mainly when there was a funeral. And it is said in the investigation, go back to 1200 and so on, that when the Crusaders came from England, they were a type of football hooligans under Richard Wagner. And they started murdering whatever was in their way, or plundering, because that was their income. The Jews fled in the mountains on both sides of the Rhine. And so the Jews were in many, many small communities spread over the area. And the same happened on the other side of the Rhine, which is called Hessen. And there my mother's family comes from. And when I was in Germany last autumn for a lecture tour, they took me to a cemetery, and I found the grave of my great-grandmother. And she was probably the grave is around 1800. And we went down on a Sunday with a lot of friends, which I made, to a place called the Ronneburg. And there, for hundreds of years, Jews lived off that burg, protected by the count who owned the burg, and they had to pay him what they called Schutzgeld, protection money. And from that protection money he did very well. And they have now found that in this beautiful burg, which is hundreds and thousands of people visiting there with restaurants and all the things, and postcards, they found when they owned one room that there were Jewish prayer books, which we just found now, going back 200 years or so or more. And we go there now as kind of, when I'm going back to meet it. But when I meet men, people of my generation, have an enormous mistrust. I'm like a dog who sniffs. And I ask usually, the Germans have a saying, wie kommt der Spinat aufs Dach? How does the spinach come on the roof? How are you? Why are you interested that and that, and I want to know? And if I'm not satisfied, I have no further communication.
How about your father? What did he do?
My father was a seed merchant, and we moved then to Wiesbaden, which is a lovely spa, today the capital of the state of Hessen, and he bought a lovely house there. And my mother had died already at the end of the First World War. we are all not very fit and had all kinds of illnesses. And mother came, the only thing I remember of her that she came to my bed to look after me. But otherwise, I only know what she looked like from photographs. My memory is completely blank.
But your sicknesses, would that have been a result of the Great War, the deprivations?
It was deprivation. In spite of us being well off, the deprivation was my father, being a very patriotic man, would not take advantage of wet market or anything of that kind. And I remember when mother's, for opposite our house, there's a French garrison. There are many Moroccans and Senegal troops. And they, of course, were not allowed to leave barracks. So they went to the fence and asked us, the boys, to get their beer from nearby. And we did it, and we also got a little tip. And then my father saw me doing it, I got a very good hiding for something as unpatriotic as that. And when mother died, then the cortege went right through the town as it was. And people from the factory in front, and we were in an open carriage behind. And then we passed the barracks. The French soldiers gave a present arms. That was an enormous impression on me. But then it was smaller. In the war, I remember the Kaiser passing our house, and they had a very funny horn, which was a ti-ta-ta. My father said, for our cash. That was my first political education. But later, in Kreuznach was a great German headquarters. So in the morning, every morning, some of us had to present flowers to Hindenburg when he went from the villa to the office. And I remember giving him a bunch of flowers. He was an enormously tall man, over 6 foot, or well over 6 foot. And with his Spiegelhaube, as they called it, on top of his brown boots, I thought that must be nearest to God. Right up in the sky, there was a face with a big moustache. But I was very happy in school. I remember the only anti-Semitic experience I had was when somebody said to me, you Jew boy, or something in a very nasty way. And my friend, who was not Jewish, he stood there back to back like Siegfried and Hagen von Tornier, he said, fighting the other boys with our wooden pen boxes. The side of it was that two boys didn't come to school the next day. My father was called in and he said, yes, I told my boys that if ever a person makes an anti-Semitic remark, you hit him as hard as you could. And then I did more or less, was thrown out of university because of being good in sports. This was something not very risky for me to do because I knew I was normally the better person.
That's going on a little, isn't it? The university is taking us on a little. I wondered if you remembered the rise of Hitler, you know, the events that led to Hitler's rise as a young boy.
Now, as a young, as I said, I had no experience with anti-Semitic tendencies, actually, until I reached university. Before that, next to me in school sat a young person who was a member of the SS. And we all knew that, and we all knew that we had communists. We were very politically orientated at that time. That was in 1931. And I remember telling me, one discussion, we were very friendly. Look, can't you believe that it must be a socialism for Germany, which is completely different to the international Germany? I said, yes, I gladly underwrite that we should have a special socialism for Germany. He said, that is a national socialism. I said, good. He said, look, what about all the other trimmings about master race and so on? He said, look, if Hitler comes to power, this will all be forgotten. But I tell you something, come next week up to the Pauline question, 31, Hitler's coming to speak, and it is only on invitation, mainly for party members, but I'm on the door, you come in and listen to it. And that was the first time I saw Hitler very close by.
How did he impress you on that occasion?
Well, first of all, he impressed me that he didn't smell that I was Jewish, which he should have done according to his theory. But interesting was that when the door opened, a little man came in, average height, very small, trained stepping, not walking, as he was going up to the stage. And that whenever you see a picture of him walking, it is a kind of rehearsed stepping out in public. And then he had very no decorations apart from the Iron Cross. And I just learned from Martin Gilbert, this book, that this Iron Cross was given to Hitler from a Jewish captain. And the Iron Cross on Hitler's chest until he died was that given to him by a Jewish captain. And then Hitler started to speak. Very slowly, very simply, very controlled, using his notes. And then he increased the speed, the emphasis, the sound, started shouting. And when he started shouting, suddenly it went like an electric wave through all those few hundred people who were there. And they started shouting back. And the sentences were exceptionally simple, nearly primitive. But so was the reaction from the public. And when he came then to the Jews, because by then he was really up in a temper, it went to and fro, and the accusations and the statements and about Germany of the future. And then the next day I met the chap who was sat next to me. And he said, oh, I am so sorry that Hitler, on one of those occasions, lost his temper. But believe me, should he ever come into power, and I know it's not for sure, this will be only to get into power, but once he will be the Chancellor of Germany, this is unimportant. By accident, too long to tell you why, I met this man after the war through his son. And he wrote me a letter as I refused to phone him back, telling me that by now we should have forgotten the past, that men will be brothers, etc., and how I should remember him as a person who was my comrade at school. And then I remembered the funny story, and he finally came with his son, and I was very cool here in our house. And I said, do you remember the school sports which we had in Germany, which was very complicated? There was swimming, athletics, gymnastics, all this in one kind of point system. And so many could represent all schools, and I consented with him our school. And as I was a member of the swimming club, I had a great advantage to others because I was a good swimmer and not only good in athletics, so I could make up for shortcomings of other sports. Anyhow, to cut a long story short, I won it for the town and for county. And I remember when the Winners were announced at first 10, starting with the 10th first. When I heard that I was not in the first 5th, I went to have a shower. I was like, no, I'll stay, you have to stay. And we all expected that this very tall, blonde SS man would be the winner. For some reason, I don't know how why, I won by 1 or 2 points. And my headmaster was a Democrat, nearly fell off the grandstand for his enthusiasm that the Jew had been the SS man. And I told him the story, and he said, yes, oh, that's all long ago. In the meantime, he had been in the Waffen-SS. He had been injured badly in the war. He was allowed to study, only studied, instead of economics, where he had already a degree, medicine. And then he had a double title, doctor, which we used in Germany. And he wrote then a letter to me. This was very unsatisfactory, and we must meet. Come and stay with me. I have a lovely house with an indoor swimming pool. Come and be my guest. And very shortly afterwards, I didn't answer. I had a card with a plaque written down on it. It was from his daughter that she had just informed me, printed, that their father, Dr. Lutzmann, as the one he was, had died. And I went back to her and said, I don't know if you ever knew that your father was already in the SS when he was in school, and told a bit more about it. Never received a reply. After the war, I was invited to a meeting of my former, and very few were left, because that was a young generation, which were officers in the German army. They were always students and became officers. And I didn't attend. But one of them wrote to me from East Germany, he returned. And I knew him from that time, from the youth movement, that he was anything but Nazi. He wrote to me, again a long story short, we met in Prenzlau, where he was in charge of the hospital, but he had been one of the high medical officers front of Stalingrad. And then after the war, when the war came to an end, he looked after the German hospitals north of Berlin and the Russians came. And he refused to leave East Germany at that time, because he felt he couldn't leave his people alone. He had a lovely house there and all that. But he had money from West Germany, as his family, his house, and everything was there, so they were in a very good situation. And then I visited him. After my first visit, the children said, you must come again. Father is so depressed since the war. And it was the first time he saw me laughing and being happy when you talked about the past. Please come again. So I invited him to come to England, but unfortunately he died. But his children have never forgotten it, and even now, 8 weeks ago when I was in Potsdam, one of their sons, who is a doctor, came all the way to come and see me.
It seems that you discriminate between the sort of Nazi and non-Nazi German, is that right? That
I lived in a world of many, many non-Jewish friends, belonged to a non-Jewish sports club. And a little story, until 1938, I stayed at a flat in Kurfürstendamm, which I shared with another 5 people who all were non-Jewish. It was long against the Nuremberg laws, but we were friends and we laughed about it. And among them was one of Germany's leading actors, Siegfried Breuer.
How do you spell his name?
E-R-E-U-E-R. All of them now already, after the war, plays the professor in The Third Man. He wouldn't have asked to do that if he was not a person who could be trusted. And he is one of the few people who was a member of the SS, and when Hitler came to power, he returned his SS uniform, saying that he, as actor, could not afford the time to do proper service in the SS. that he would prefer to do it properly or not at all, and yet decided to concentrate on his acting. Another little story, two stories. One is, and my wife, was at that time my girlfriend, had a birthday. The true secret warrior, all the leading German actors from the Deutsche Theater came to the party. And never in my life did I heard or seen so many stories and jokes acted out than by the leading German actors of the Nazi Germany. At the other end, Siegfried said to me, "Yogi, I'm playing tonight the Prince from Homburg at last. And I'm playing the Prince. And I want you to see it." I said, "I won't come because you know Juden are nicht erwünscht in the theater. Not that it would disturb me, but you must come, you and your wife. I got a box for you. You don't need to mix with the general public, in case people know you or so on, but I don't know. But I want you to see it. There's a little side lodge you can be in the event." And once we are waiting for the play to start and the curtain to rise, Siggy came running in. "Raus, raus, raus." I said, "What do you mean? Raus? What do you mean?" "The Goebbels wants the lodge." And then I came out, there stood Goebbels, with a good-looking lady, I don't know whether it was his wife, and said, "Oh, please, please, do, there's room for all," fighting their two of his bodyguard. Said, "Thank you very much indeed, we've got two other seats in the house, we don't want to disturb you." And again, he didn't smell that I was Jewish. That are interesting stories. And
how did the Nuremberg, or Hitler, when he came to power in 33, how did that directly affect you? You know, you've been explaining about your friends and how they sort of stood by you.
When Hitler came to power, I was in my first year at Berlin University. And we didn't believe that he would come to power because he only had 107 seats in a parliament over 600. And they were enormously surprised when the German conservatives linked up with him because of his promises to restore armaments and armament production. And they again, their papers gave the impression that, all right, if that is not coming off, in a democracy, things can be changed. So we were just sitting in the Mensa with a girlfriend of mine, and we had lunch. Then suddenly it was announced over the radio, "Today, Field Marshal Paul von Hindenburg-Benneckendorff hat den Führer der Deutschen Nationalsozialistischen Arbeiterpartei mit der Bildung einer Regierung beauftragt." I leave it in German, but you will understand. And then the next sentence was, "We now bring the water levels." It was so ironical that the water had risen. And of course, there was enormous laughter. And in university, we were separated in more or less three or four groups of students. One was the what we call the Verbindungen, the students who belonged to the students' fraternities. The second group were those who were mainly interested in sports and sports students. And the third were people for various reasons did not belong to any of those groups. And every morning at 11 o'clock, the fraternities had a special, what's called, Spielkonvent, which they gathered together in small groups in the main hall of the university. mainly under a little coat of arms on the wall, which indicated that that was their place where they would meet. Jewish students had very rarely been admitted to very few of those fraternities, and the others would not accept Jews. The Jews had formed their own fraternities. One group was Zionist, and the other was German Jewish.
And which group did you belong to, Mr. Mayer?
No, I didn't. I belonged to the sports. And I remember standing there amongst friends with their colored caps, the ribbons across their chest, with their special leather gloves in the left hand, and a little stick, reminding me of English officers. It was a class distinction. And it was before, Nazis were just already at power, not before. We had also groups of SR in uniform. And some SR people rushed up the big staircase up to the gallery. And one of them had taken off the coat of arms of the Jewish fraternity. And he shouted, "Like this will bust and break, so we will break Judaism," and threw it down. To everybody's amazement, this old oak coat of arms jumped like a rubber ball. And I still hear the laughter going all over the big hall at university. And there we had a little professor, little because he was a hunchback, called Wolf. He was the most famous professor on German law, civil law, to such an extent that he had his lectures in the Auditorium Maximum, which was 800 seats. And you had to put a card down on your seat to make sure that this place was yours when he spoke. And I remember when he came in, a little man with a hunchback, beautiful speaker, lovely voice, like a cello. I could use for hours for him. And suddenly he stopped and said, "In the last row, there are two fellow students who are reading the Völkische Beobachter. Could I point out to them that this is a lecture about a law which the Völkische Beobachter has nothing to do with it? Could I ask those Kommilitonen please to leave my auditorium?" And you can't hear the trembling and delight of all the others where he had the courage. He later on got to England and was lecturer in an English university, I think, in Oxford. Friedrich Wolf. Those are little stories which indicate my life in Germany.